This is All Things Considered on 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Yesterday was crossover day at the state capitol. That's the day by which measures have to pass either one house or the other, or they go to sleep for a year in most cases. With us a couple of folks who've also spent a little time at the capitol this year, our own WABE reporters Jonathan Shapiro and Michelle Wirth. Welcome to both of you. Good to have you.
Good to be here, Dennis.
Good to be here.
Let's take a look at some things that happened in a little bit different way than we thought, first of all. We were told earlier on this is going to be a very businesslike session. We're just going to take care of housekeeping and budgets and maybe do some ethics work. But there were a couple of bills that came up unexpectedly. One, Jonathan, you covered, was a big change to Georgia's gun laws. It passed the House on crossover day, greatly expanding the list of places where you can carry a gun. This after Speaker Ralston had said at the beginning of the session, well, we're probably not going to get into big hot-button issues this year.
And Speaker Ralston said that he allowed this bill to hit the floor because he felt like the Obama administration had been overly aggressive in their
their response to Sandy Hook, particularly, I guess.
Right. Basically, this bill would allow guns in places that they are currently prohibited. That includes churches, bars, government buildings, some areas of college campuses, and outside of airports. So definitely a significant ease on restrictions of gun owners. It also would allow some administrators in grade schools to be allowed to carry guns as well, administrators who receive certain training to carry those firearms in those schools.
But now the Senate has sent out some interesting signals, at least at the beginning, because now that the bill is over there, President Pro Tem David Schaefer has said, well, we've already passed a gun bill of our own, and they have, but it's very early yet. There may be some pressure to let this one sit for a year because they have another year to pass it, or there may be some pressure to get it out right away.
Yeah, I mean, it's really difficult to predict how it's going to go in the Senate at this point. We have heard some reservations expressed within the party at the beginning.
The party being the GOP.
Right. Because, like you said before, Speaker Ralston had stated repeatedly before the session that this wasn't going to be an issue that was going to be moved on this session.
Michelle, another bill that sort of went against the direction we thought was a bill that said, okay, we're going to make sure that proceeds from video games, like the kind you see in some of the gas stations and so forth and convenience stores, that would be controlled by the Georgia Lottery. But what this does in the process is also, in a way, legitimize those games that have always been in the shadows. And this, after Governor Deal has said for a long time, we're not going to do anything that would expand video gaming in the state or even look like casinos. These games kind of look like casinos.
Well, sponsors say that these video gaming machines are already legal, so they say that it's not expanding gambling in the state, and they say that that's consistent with what the governor has said all along. And they say what this would do essentially is they would hook these gaming machines into a centralized system so that they would be able to see if there were machines that were operating illegally. And they really say this is needed because right now they say there are a number of gas stations where these video machines, gaming machines are, and there is essentially, like you said, a casino in the back rooms of these gas stations and convenience stores. And they say that there's millions of dollars that could potentially would have been able to go to the Hope Scholarship Program that are funneling to other places.
But did they give any idea how they'd be able to enforce making sure that these games comply with the new law if indeed it passes once it gets through?
They did talk a little bit about the enforcement, and it was very it sounded very complicated to me. they talked about how they would, you know, compare the receipts and be able to basically monitor the system. But it did sound like a very complicated system.
Another bill, Michelle, that inspired a lot of debate that you've covered very closely is the parent trigger law. This is the charter school bill, which allows parents or school administrators to petition and basically get the ball rolling on setting up a charter school. That one made it through the House and heads to the Senate, where I'm sure that battle will be joined again.
This bill is supposed to be aimed at poor performing schools. And those who support this say that a lot of times school boards don't even consider petitions by parents or schools that are concerned and want to turn their school into a charter school, a poor performing school.
So if you get like 60% of parents or administrators or staffers petitioning for a charter school, that just sort of kicks it into gear, right?
Right, and it basically makes it harder for school boards to ignore the petitioners.
So this battle will probably be rejoined once it moves over to the Senate. I'm sure the local control argument will come up. School boards and school superintendents will probably raise concerns about it. So this one's not over either.
Right, and I would especially, you know, look for people such as Jan Jones and others who have sponsored a lot of charter school legislation in the past to likely chime in on this.
She's the House Speaker pro tem from North Fulton County. Jonathan, speaking of North Fulton County, one of the issues that you've covered very closely is MARTA, big MARTA overhaul bill that passed the House in the last couple of days before crossover day. One of the things about that bill is it changes the structure of the MARTA board, giving far more representation to North Fulton County.
Yeah. It's a big restructuring of MARTA. Part of it would privatize major functions of the transit agency. It would also, in the original legislation, would have mandated employee health benefit and pension reform. Now, the sponsor of the bill, Mike Jacobs of Brookhaven, a Republican, has just in the last week conceded that the mandatory pension reform would potentially violate some federal collective bargaining rules. And that's something that he says as the bill now gets heard in the Senate, the committee meeting will probably be sometime next week. But as the bill makes its way through the Senate, there will likely be amendments to the employee benefit parts of that piece of legislation. But the core of it, the privatization of major functions of it, of MARTA, and the shifting of board appointment powers from the south side of Fulton to the north side of Fulton, those all remain, and he defended those vigorously during a public hearing last week.
Now, this is one where provisions like this have been tried before in the Senate and have failed. And in speaking to some of the opponents, including Atlanta State Senator Vincent Fort, one of the things that I got was they're not giving up in the Senate. They say, we've beaten bills like this before. We think we might have a chance this time. Given the current composition of the Senate, overwhelmingly Republican, is there a chance that there will be a close vote on this, or is the way pretty much greased for this?
I think more of the latter. I spoke with President Pro Tem David Schaefer yesterday during crossover day, and he said that reform was needed for MARTA. So particularly Atlanta Democrats are going to make as much of a huff about this as they can. But the numbers are simply in favor of Republicans getting this passed. If leadership, if they want this passed, they will get this passed.
Michelle, there was an example, though, of bipartisanship, and that happened right on crossover day. This was when a bill that was originally an idea of a Smyrna Democrat, Representative Stacey Evans, got passed overwhelmingly by the House with a Republican chief sponsor added to it. And that's the bill that eases the requirements for maintaining or for getting a HOPE grant for some students. This is the technical college grant. This isn't the scholarship that a lot of four-year students take.
That's right, Dennis. It passed, as you said, overwhelmingly 169-1. And what it does supposedly, or what the bill is aimed at doing, is helping more technical college students afford school. Because in 2011, they basically changed the requirements, the eligibility requirements for the HOPE grant and the HOPE scholarship program. But for the HOPE grant, what they changed it to was the requirement right now is that students have to maintain a 3.0. And this actually lowers it to students would just have to maintain a 2.0. And they say that that would keep more students in these technical colleges.
And that was the way it used to be before the standard was raised because of a funding crisis, right?
Right. And what those who support this say happened is that when the change happened, when it went from a 2.0 to a 3.0, students began dropping out. And they also say that, you know, enrollment at these technical colleges went down. And, you know, the governor and so many other people in the state want to add more students to these technical colleges, really beef up the workforce for these technical jobs that some are going unfilled in many cases right now.
And unlike the MARTA bill that Jonathan and I just talked about, this one probably will not have a difficult time in the Senate, although you never say for sure in these predictions. But it seems as if, again, with the support of the governor and leaders in both parties, this one will probably have a fairly easy time in the Senate.
I would guess you're right. And Representative Stacey Evans yesterday told me that as soon as they showed the governor the numbers, that's when, you know, the governor endorsed this fully. And she said she was so happy that this passed because she actually was able to go to school on the HOPE scholarship program, not the HOPE grant, but the HOPE scholarship program. And she just says that this, she thinks that this will dramatically change students' life because many of them, they live in households that make less than $40,000. And she says this will actually be their ticket to the middle class.
One of the priorities for this session, though, was ethics. And Jonathan, this was a bill that got worked over a lot by committees in the House. Speaker David Ralston originally proposed this bill, took a lot of heat for some of the provisions of it. It did pass, moves over to the Senate, which has its own version working around. Where do you think we're going to see some of the biggest fights on this?
Like you said, the Senate has a version of this already. They passed a $100 gift cap. And so on the Senate side, it may be tougher because they've already passed a measure and they felt like that was sufficient at the time. So, you know, as it makes its way through the Senate, it'll be very interesting to see how much further it goes.
One of the critiques from ethics watchdog groups has been there are some expenses that are considered to be okay for a group to cover if a lawmaker goes and speaks to them, like plane fare or whatever, as long as it's connected to their official duties. And Jonathan, that's where the critique comes, because they feel that official duties is a very broad thing that could cover all sorts of stuff that might or might not be connected to your official duties.
Yeah, I mean, defining those activities, also defining what exactly a lobbyist is, that's been the debate.
Yeah, and one of the reasons that both houses are trying to weigh in on this is that in non-binding referendums last summer, voters overwhelmingly expressed support for ending unlimited lobbyist gifts. So that's why they're taking these measures up.
But the devil will be in the details, no question about that. Let's take a look at some bills that did not make it, because sometimes that's as instructive as the bills that did. There was one bill that would have banned Georgia Power from making big profits on cost overruns at the Vogtle project, the Vogtle expansion project. That bill was slated for a committee hearing in the House right before crossover day and did not make it. Another one that didn't make it was a very hotly debated bill, and this one would have completely overhauled the state's medical malpractice system, basically taking a lot of these claims, most of them, out of the court system entirely and turning it over to an appointed board. That is still pending. It still has a year to pass, but it did not make crossover day, so it won't go through this session.
Yeah, the system that it would create, it would look like the state workers' compensation board, and that panel, that board, would be appointed by the governor. And they would basically be tasked with settling all medical malpractice cases. Trial lawyers, in particular, had a huge issue with this. In the committee meeting, trial lawyers, physician groups, including the Medical Association of Georgia, and also consumer advocates, voiced concerns about what this would do in terms of access to the courts, access to a jury trial. They said it would clearly be unconstitutional. And the committee members, while seeming to welcome the discussion, they seemed to hear those concerns that likely it would be unconstitutional as currently written.
Yeah, so even people who might have favored the idea might have thought, okay, the courts are going to think we're overreaching and this is a fight we don't need. Is
that right? Right. And, you know, that said, I mean, there was a lot of interest expressed by the committee members, which is why they tabled the bill for now. They're going to convene a task force over the summer to study the issue further. And what I actually heard from one lawmaker is that they'd like to just try to target this for Medicare and Medicaid enrollees. So any malpractice claims by just Medicare and Medicaid patients would possibly be channeled into this proposed state panel.
Michelle, one of the other ideas that didn't make it was a bill that would require insurance companies to cover things like autism, for instance. So we're seeing a task force now set up on that. And I want to toss this out actually to both of you. Are we getting the feeling that despite some exceptions where we have particular big bills that pass, this legislature is a lot more cautious even on bills that come up from some of its own leaders? The autism bill came from Ben Harbin, who's one of the leaders in the House.
I think they are being very cautious. I did hear that there were some people who actually advocate for those with autism who were concerned about this bill. And I know Bernie Marcus on the other side came out in support of this. And supposedly, I believe the governor even said that he would sign the bill if it made it to his desk. But I think they're being cautious for various reasons. Obviously, they don't want lawsuits. They don't want this to come back and basically to have to fix the law again.
And there has been a commission set up, which I think is going to start meeting next week, on what should be mandated and what shouldn't. This goes back, Jonathan, to controversy a few years ago when mammograms were proposed as being a mandated coverage. So this is a debate that's been going on for years as to how much the legislature should have say over what gets covered. And at the same time, you have the problem of a lot of uninsured patients. So you're trying to strike a balance here.
Yeah, and I think it's a delicate balance. I think definitely that leadership is treating this session very delicately, because in years past, there has been a lot of infighting, particularly on the Senate side, between some of the more moderate members of the GOP and some of the more conservative members, the Tea Party folks that came on, especially after the 2010 elections. This was best exemplified by Governor Deal in getting the hospital bed tax, which was one of the mm-hmm. most controversial issues back in 2010, and actually contributed to Lieutenant Governor Casey Cagle losing some of his power as Lieutenant Governor. He was able to get that piece of legislation redirected or reworked and
got it through in the first couple of days, really. This was a provider fee that shores up the Medicaid program.
Right. And rather than picking fights with the more conservative members of his own party over what they would call a tax increase, he was able to get legislation passed that empowered a state agency to levy that fee/tax and completely prevent any infighting at all within the GOP.
So we have some big battles that actually have been postponed for a year. There are some bills that didn't make it, like the creating Milton County, the idea of clearing the way for folks to create a school district in Dunwoody, the tort reform issue that Jonathan mentioned a moment ago, and possibly even some language that would establish personhood for embryos. They didn't make it for crossover day, but they could surface either in the later days as an amendment to something else, or they could turn up next year. So some of these battles could come up next year in a session that could be far livelier than this one, don't you think?
Definitely.
Yes, definitely. It's going to be an interesting next month or two of this session.
Jonathan Shapiro, Michelle Shelworth, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks.
And we'll check back with you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.